From their respective homes over Zoom, it's Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast. Well, maybe in Hollywood, Florida. Now, here are your hosts, Jesse Gaskell and Mike Sweeney.
Welcome to Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast. I'm Mike Sweeney.
I'm Jesse Gaskell. And that was Joel Goddard, who you heard doing our intro.
Yes, very excited that he did our intro. And coincidentally, he's also this week's guest.
He is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we found him. I mean, a lot of people have asked for an interview with Joel Goddard. He was, for those who don't know, the announcer for Late Night for many, many years.
For the entire run of Late Night, yeah, from 1993 to 2000, early 2009. And he, especially once Andy left the show in 2000, Joel would be on the show periodically in sketches, but once Andy left, he was on a lot more and he was in hundreds of sketches. And he became a real fan favorite. People love him.
Mm-hmm. The character of Joel, who was...
The character of Joel, right. He was very malleable. He would do...
Yes.
We'd be like, sometimes, early on, it'd be like, do you think Joel will do this? I don't know. And he'd be like, oh, I'll do anything you write.
Uh-huh.
And after a while, I was like, oh, I don't think we even have to run this by him.
Yeah.
That's correct. I'll do anything you write, and I will say it and act it out.
Yeah, he didn't say no to much.
Which was great.
It was great.
Yes. No.
Great for comedy writers.
Sometimes Max would be like, I don't want to do that, Max Weinberg. And we'd be like, okay, we'll give it to La Bamba. And he'd be like, let me check the script again. That was our little, we're like, well, give it to someone else in the band. Not a big deal, Max.
Right,
totally
right.
Understand.
And how did you find, because you did some legwork to find Joel. I know that he wasn't exactly... Like, he's not on...
Oh, to find him for this podcast.
Social media, yeah.
Yeah, he has been and hasn't been, but we tried different numbers and emails, and we were all coming up dry. And then you and I were at Conan's live podcast that he did at the Wiltern, and I saw Jordan there. You know, Jordan's been Late Night since almost the beginning, where he started out as an intern, and somehow Joel came up, and we're like, well, yeah, we really want to get Joel to be on the show, and we can't track him down. And Jordan was just like, oh my God, well, you've got to. And he goes, I have contacts. I will send you all my contacts.
Oh, wow.
And so we went through Jordan, and he had one.
Wait.
Number that no one else had.
Jordan did something?
Jordan actually did something. We shouldn't include this in the podcast because it totally undermines.
It ruins the mythology of Jordan.
He actually provided, although, you know.
He provided a service.
Providing someone's phone
number. Not technically something that he gets paid to do, though.
No.
So I think we're still okay on that front.
Yeah. Just sending someone a phone number is not really heavy lifting. I'm going to say. So I think he's still, his record remains.
Oh, for 5,000. Yeah.
Exactly. But he was very excited. And we do have to thank Jordan Schlansky. Without him.
Words that have never been spoke.
And we checked with his wife on that too. Never been spoken.
Well, that's great. I mean, and so it took a little bit of hunting, but we did find Joel.
And I'm excited Joel's doing our New Year's Eve special because... we used to do New Year's Eve countdowns, and Joel was always a big part of that, so...
That's right. It is New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
Do you have any plans for New Year's Eve?
I'm going out to the desert. I'm going to Palm Springs.
Oh, I know that trick.
How's it a trick?
I don't know. You can avoid people.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. It's a much older crew down there. It makes me feel very young.
Yes, that's right.
Yes, I feel really good about myself.
I know. They're like, oh, look at you still having white hair.
Exactly. Although most of them seem to be in much better shape than me. So it's...
They're just tanner.
Tan does create the illusion of health.
Mm-hmm, it does.
Well, it did in the 60s, not anymore.
Back when doctors would prescribe it.
Right, right.
Are you taking your kids?
No.
Okay.
No, we love them too much.
I would feel sad for them if they were spending New Year's Eve with their parents.
We like traveling with them, but we wouldn't.
Oh, no, you guys are extremely healthy as a family.
You know what? We are. I'm going to take her. Yeah. I mean, so far.
Yeah, there's always time for alienation later.
Both of our sons could drop us like tomorrow and wouldn't see it coming. But
when they find out about the will that you're donating all your money to the Humane Society.
Yes, exactly. To one particular dog.
One animal.
Yes. That's the way to do it. What are you doing for New Year's Eve?
Oh, you know, I was thinking of doing the British New Year's thing where you celebrate at like 4 o'clock and then go to bed after that.
Oh, I never stay up till midnight. I had no idea that was British. I've been doing that for years and years. The Irish goodbye to New Year's Eve. I just, if we're at a party, we leave before midnight.
Just leave, yeah. I think we might go to another couple's house and have a sleepover.
Wait, is that true?
Yes. Because nobody wants to drive on New Year's Eve. And I also hate taking lifts.
Sure.
So yeah, we're going to take over some tamales.
Okay.
Got a big tamale order that we picked up and that's the party.
That a sleepover with another couple.
I know. We'll see.
We'll have to see how that goes.
There's musical beds.
Yeah. Do I know this couple?
No, and you never will.
Damn.
Okay, fine. It's Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson.
Oh, I knew it. Oh, yeah, that's a trip. They're all the way over on the west side.
You definitely have to stay over. I don't want to drive home after that.
Yeah, that's like a 20-minute drive.
Luckily, they have one spare bedroom for us.
Right. They have 4 spare houses. It's like, well, that sounds great.
Yeah.
You win again.
Oh, it's not a competition.
No, it's not. No, I'm excited to go to the desert. I love the desert.
Yeah, I know.
I think we should introduce our guest.
Oh, we did.
Oh, we did, right? Who knows? He's a legend of Late Night with Conan O'Brien. He is
right.
The one and only announcer.
The voice behind the magic.
Mr. Joel Goddard.
Hey, Mike, how are you? Hi, Jesse. How are you doing?
Good.
Oh, that classic golden voice.
Oh, man.
Silky smooth.
I could just let that voice wash over me all day. And it's great to see you. You're in Southern California.
Costa Mesa, California. Good town.
I think you should do ads for Costa Mesa Board of Tourism.
As Don LaFontaine, the voice of God, used to say, for a fee.
Oh, yeah.
Well, of course. Especially Costa Mesa has deep pockets. They should definitely pay you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can we just start at the beginning, Joel, of your tenure with Late Night? Because you were also a member of the Day One Club, which we've talked about. That was people who started on the very first day of the show.
13 September 1993.
Wow. Mind like a trap. But how did you come to be the announcer of Late Night? Did you have to audition? Did you know people there?
It is a combination of everything. I was the first announcer for NBC Dateline. Now they just call it Dateline.
Oh, so you got to say, and it turns out the husband did it.
Yeah, that I probably did another voiceover or two for Saturday Night Live. I know I had when I was on staff. And I did a couple, you know, after I was on our show, the Conan show. Then about August of 93, Dateline had a little bit of a problem with an exploding pickup truck, if you remember that scandal.
Oh, no.
I don't.
They kind of rigged something about...
Oh. You
know, like a reenactment that went wrong?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I don't remember that. I think they swept it under the rug.
Well... They didn't. Somebody else came in and took over news, and they, you know, like when a mob guy gets hit, all of his guys go down too, and they were firing everybody. They fired me in August of 93. Right about that time is when I heard I was going to get a chance to audition for you.
For Late Night, for this new show.
This new show with this young fellow that nobody had heard of. So in the spring of that year, I had already, because I was in the building, I'd gotten wind of the fact that a new show was going to be in the offing. And I heard the guy's name was Jeff Ross. And I managed to find out how to contact him. And I contacted him, and he was very nice to me on the phone. He said, well, you know, send me stuff, let me know. So a guy upstairs on the ninth floor, forget his name, named Chris, and also Gary Rotta, helped me put together an audio tape or audio cassette to get to Jeff Ross, and I did.
He was the producer of the show, Jeff Ross.
He's producer. He was going to be producer. And he was nice to me. And so I would check back occasionally from the spring until this came about in August. Here's a secret. You need to call enough times that they know you're still interested, you're still available, and you still think you're up to it.
Right.
But not enough that every time the phone rings, he says, I'm not here, you know.
Right. So, how many times do you think that is?
I don't know.
What's the right number?
Probably at least two more times that summer,
mm-hmm.
you know, just to let him know I still was interested.
Uh-huh.
So within August, my then manager got word that they were looking for Joel Goddard or a Joel Goddard type.
Oh, boy.
That's the way it was said. And she said, well, I've got Joel Goddard, you know. So one thing led to another.
How about Joel Goddard?
Yes. The king of freelance, I think, at that time in New York was Joel Krager. And he got me a chance to talk to Chaz Cowing at J. Michael Bloom & Associates.
Chaz.
As my agent of record to talk to the show.
Uh-huh.
So things were off and running. And by August, I was invited to audition. And there were 10 test shows.
Wow.
I was up for 5 of them. So I knew I was onto something, okay?
Yeah.
Sure enough, as they say down home, I got it. I got the gig.
Wow. So it was between you. I'm guessing someone else did the other 5 test shows.
Another Joel Goddard.
Yeah, some other guys. I don't know. I've never known who they were.
It's best that way.
I think one of them introduced himself to me, but I can't remember who it was.
And you said, get away from me.
It was traditional. You know, like Bill Wendell did all the promos for Letterman.
Bill Wendell was the announcer for Letterman.
That's the way it had always been done. This time, the show, or maybe it was the Suits of the network, they didn't want to necessarily use me for the promos. And they were offering me, like, scale, you know, for the show also. I mean, not great pay, but, you know, scale for doing the network show. And Chaz said, well, you know, they're not offering enough money, and they want to take the promos away from you. He said, I'd walk. Well, he didn't know it, but Jesus Christ, the last thing in the world I could do was walk.
Right.
You know, I just had to eat it. As you understand this, you know, you guys are in the business. I couldn't afford to walk.
Right.
Well, promos, schmomos, I say.
Yeah.
So they came to you after your 5 test shows and said, you're our guy to be the announcer for the show.
Right. Now we'll talk business. Yeah. And all
very
that.
Exciting. And you said you had done a few things for Saturday Night Live. Had you met Robert Smigel when you did those, or maybe he became aware of you?
He became
when you were
aware
doing
of
stuff
me.
On SNL?
I may have met him once. I think I did work with him once, and I worked with a couple of guys doing, not promos, but doing actually little silly voiceover things. Like there was one thing called, you remember the, some kind of a group, it was a discussion program that aired.
Oh, right. McLaughlin Group.
Yeah.
The McLaughlin Group.
They did sketches, parodies of that on SNL, right?
Right.
With Dana Carvey.
Yeah, Dana Carvey and so forth.
Uh-huh.
So they had me do a fake intro called The Sinatra Group from Washington, D.C., The Sinatra Group. I tried to sound like their announcer, you know.
Right.
And they used it. They used it.
Yeah.
That's an example of some of the things I did for them.
That's great. And so it sounds like Robert Smigel, who, you know, of course, started the Conan show with Conan and probably possibly Conan, you had struck a chord with them. And maybe that's where the we need a Joel Goddard type came from. So.
Mm-hmm.
I think I owe it to Robert Smigel. I'm pretty sure that he's the reason I got the show. Conan may have been aware of me. I don't know. I never worked for him when he was on the SNL.
Right, right, right.
But I think Smigel had a lot to do with it.
Sure, that's great.
Thank you, Robert.
There you go.
Yeah.
What was that like going to work at... Well, you'd worked at 30 Rock for a while, but what was it like starting on this new show?
Oh, it was a thrill. It was a thrill. I've always loved doing all of this. And I'm never nervous before going on. which may usually is a bad sign, but I'm never nervous.
Well, this might be obvious, but you did your part live, I'm assuming. So you were there with the energy of the crowd. Yeah.
Right. I used to tell Teddy, you know, my wife, Teddy Dreiser-Goddard, she was nervous. I said, no, I'm never nervous, but I worry something. Well, she said, well, that's a form of nervousness. Well, maybe so, but I mean, I'm never like this. You see my hand shaking, you know?
Yeah.
I was never like that.
Right.
Never like that going on.
We started using you in comedy bits on the show, and you were up for anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if you said no to anything.
No.
Do you ever remember saying no to any bit that was proposed to you where you're like, okay, now you're fucking with me?
I have a line, yes.
Right.
I'm uncomfortable with this. No, I never said that. One day I was walking up the hall, years into our time, walking up the hall in a gold suit with gold paint on my face and everything. It was Oscar night. And Jeff Ross said, when are you going to say no? And of course, I never did.
Do you remember the first sketch that you appeared in, or how that came about?
Oh, yes. Okay, you understand, I'm a big-time actor. I have a filmography of one.
That's right.
Okay, and that was Guyana Tragedy, the story of Jim Jones, with Powers Booth, and I play Brenda Vaccaro's husband, who is supposed to be, what's his name?
Mrs. Vaccaro.
Although she called me Joel when we did the scene, and did scenes in Atlanta, where I was living had been living at the time. It was done in 1980. And also went down to Dorado Del Mar, and some out in the jungles. And it was a fun thing. And I got to do a death scene.
Oh, yeah. That's every actor's dream.
Yeah. In fact,
there were a lot of death scenes probably in the Jim Jones story, I'm guessing.
Oh, there were quite a few. Yes. And some by gunfire, but supposed to be running away, getting shot.
A coward.
Yes. And she had already been shot. They were going to shoot my part from a distance and from behind. You know, I have the squib taped to my back. Mm-hmm. I could either pickle it myself, carry the switch, and or I could let them do it. I said, no, I want it to be a surprise. I'm not going to pickle it myself. I'm afraid it would read even from behind. So it was about 30 yards. And so they had this wire out running all around and looped back so I could do this. So I'm out running, and when it's supposed to be a 30-30 aimed at you, I know it's pretend, but you can kind of get into it, you know, when you're thinking about getting shot. So I'm running out and running forward, and that squib went off. And on purpose, I didn't do the you break your fall with your knee and all that stuff. I didn't do the stuntman thing, or maybe they don't do it either, but I didn't do the typical acting thing of breaking my fall. My feet came off the ground. That was on purpose. And I hit, bam.
Wow, face first.
Pancake, face first, as I had planned. Now, even though this was intentional, it stunned me just for a split second. Now, the squib, you know, the contents, and appropriately, it's a condom filled with fake blood, you know, and the squib explodes it. Well, some of that had flipped around, that liquid, and got toward my eye. You know, I could see it dripping down in front of my eye. And I was stunned there for a second. And for that second, just for a split second, I thought, oh, fuck, you know? Because, you know, when you're stunned like that, you wasn't sure it wasn't for real, you know?
Oh.
So that only lasted a second. But I remember that reaction.
Wow. So you were a one-take wonder.
Yeah.
Sounds like they got it.
Yeah. Anyway, the director, he said, that was great. That may have been the best scene you've done. well, thank you. And then I thought to myself, well, I had no reading lines and I was shot from 30 yards back.
Right.
You died.
Yeah.
We really loved when you died.
Right.
Yeah.
I can't believe you were never killed on Conan.
Oh, I probably was.
Oh, you know, you were killed many times.
Many times.
Yes.
Yeah. So Conan's at home watching the Superstation or whatever in those days, watching movies, and this movie came up. And he came into the writer's room the next day, and he told the writers, he said, I'm sitting there watching this movie about Jim Jones and all, and I hear this voice. And so that's Joel, he said, but he's got black hair. And I said, because I was beginning to get a little bit of gray by the time he came up with you guys, you know, on the temples at least. Mm-hmm. He said, yeah, he said, I guess he can act, you know, write something for him. So the first thing they wrote, I believe, was a piece about a guy, I wish I could remember his name. He did a great job. He played a professor, a sex education professor, who was too embarrassed to talk about it or to use any of the words or to describe anything. Uh-huh. And say, you know, he'd say, so they do, you know, yeah, he kept saying, you know, things like that.
Right.
And he did a great job. And somehow I was involved. Maybe I was the supposedly the narrator who introduces him or something. We did that. And then one or two other little things. And then Janine DiTullio,
who is writer
one
on
the
show.
Writer on the show.
Very funny.
She came up with Joel is sad.
Right.
And that's what really got me rolling.
That, and so the show had been on a few years.
Yeah.
Because I think that was like in 95 or 96, the show. And
yeah, at least.
Prior to that, you were pretty much playing the straight announcer for the show at the top.
Right. Voiceover announcer.
I remember that. She came up with this bit where Andy thought you sounded a little depressed when you did the announcement.
Yes.
And so they check in with you back in your booth,
yes.
Which was in another part of the studio.
And that was back in the days. It wasn't this wonderful booth that we wound up with after the control room meltdown, you know, years later. It was kind of more like a typical announce booth, which is kind of a broom closet, you know?
Right, claustrophobic.
Yeah. And they would come to me, and I would be saying all these nihilistic things, mm-hmm. and can't wait for the cool embrace of the grave and
all
of this stuff. And then another time I was talking about my alcoholic father. My father just would not have understood if he had seen that, you know. He was gone by
so
then.
So you didn't, okay.
Yeah, because he didn't drink at all. But I was listening for the crunch of the pickup truck on the gravel outside, and hearing that, I knew it was going to be a whiskey Christmas. I bet you remember that line. You probably wrote that, Mike.
Wow, you have a good memory.
And went through several iterations.
It did.
And the idea to begin with, I would be spending my weekends not going home, but staying in the booth all weekend, drinking and doing drugs.
There were a lot of drinking and drug jokes back then.
Because I had this adulterous wife.
Right.
Supposedly.
Right. You were a cuckold.
Yes. And whose boyfriend, I'm supposed to have shown up at home early, and her boyfriend comes to the door and beats me up. You know, right? Relating that story. And in real life, some of the doormen in our building asked Teddy, what do you think about all that, Mrs. Goddard? And she hijacked Liberace's line. She said, I'm offended all the way to the bank. So,
well, I'm glad she was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, she didn't mind. She was getting a lot of action.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Did people ever say things to you about it? About this kind of your comedy persona on the show, like this hapless announcer?
Sometimes. Mm-hmm. Skipping several years ahead, I'd let my hair grow out into a gray ponytail.
Right.
As a straight guy for, you know, several years. And then finally, they decided to make me unapologetically gay. You remember that? A guy, when we were in Toronto, the only time I was ever hit on by a man in Toronto, a very nicely attired man at one of our after show parties, you know, in Toronto, came up, you know, and very nice and polite and total decorum. He said, you know, do you have anyone, you know, do you have a lover and so forth? And I said, well, yeah, here she is. Actually, she's right here. This is my wife. He was quite dignified and so forth, but that's the only time I ever got hit on. In spite, how many years, Mike, do you think I did the gay thing? Two years, maybe three, because we had Toshi and all of that.
Right, right. But, well, do you remember the first time you were recognized for being on Conan?
I've been recognized in two or three countries.
Oh.
Ooh.
I like that.
When we were in France, it was recognized.
Well, Toronto counts.
And yeah, Toronto counts. Yeah, it was really recognized then. We needed... really needed that security to get us through the crush of the crowd.
Oh.
Yeah, so that made an impression on me, that I made an impression somewhere.
We did a week of shows in Toronto.
Right.
And that in February, which is the best time to be in Toronto. And it was a fun week.
Yeah. It takes your breath away.
Yes.
The cold, it was so cold, it would literally take your breath away when you stepped out the door.
Yeah, it was great. You were recognized in France?
Recognized by a fan in France at least once, maybe a couple of different trips. But in Venice, 25 different fans, they're all traveling together. And they saw us, and they followed us. We were on the Vaporetto, and they wanted to talk to me. So when we got off, went to near that famous bar, Harry's Bar or whatever it is.
Harry's Bar. St. Mark's.
Yes. Mm. And they wanted to talk to me and to get my picture. And Teddy was going to, usually people would just shove the camera at Teddy, and want to get a selfie. And my question is always, do you want the real me or do you want the stupid grin? Because the stupid grin, which is what I would do a lot after those even nihilistic statements,
Yeah.
And invariably, they wanted the stupid grin, always.
Right.
But in her case, they said, we'll take turns taking the shot. We want you in there, too. So her picture was in there, too.
Oh, that's nice.
Down in the, Virgin Gorda. I was recognized down there.
Okay. Well, you're very well traveled. I like the places you've been recognized. Never in the United States.
No, I started getting that in the States. It must have been like the mid to late 90s. I started getting recognized.
Yeah,
and then of course into the aughts, I was really recognized frequently. And for several years after coming out here to California, we moved out here in 2011. Uh-huh. For at least a couple of years, I was being recognized and people wanted pictures.
Oh.
That's begun to die out because they're so old, some of them are dying out. Who knows?
Ha, ha, ha.
Well, it seems like people would want you to do record messages for them or make a phone call. You could prank call people for them.
One guy in Montauk, one guy wanted that. We owned a little love nest in Montauk for a while at the Bourne Free Motel, where you could have your dogs. and we bought a unit there. But there was a young fellow was visiting, and he recognized me. So I remember saying, let's say his name is Mike Sweeney.
Sure.
I remember recording, you have reached the telephone of Mike Sweeney. Mike can't be with you right now, but he'll be returning your call as soon as he gets out of rehab. The kid thought that was just great.
Accurate.
Yeah.
No, that's fantastic. Well, that's interesting when you're known for your voice. Like, I remember when I started working at 30 Rock, Don Pardo, the announcer for SNL, sometimes he'd be in our elevator, and he would always start talking kind of just to no one in particular, but he'd be like, I've been working here since 47 and that guy asked for my ID. Here's my ID, the same one I've had.
And 30 it's like, Rockefeller Plaza.
Right, exactly. Going up to the 9th floor. But we're like, we get it, you're Don Pardo. It seemed to be for that reason only that he was...
Well, bless him, he got tired of doing the Macy's Parade.
Uh-huh.
And I wound up doing the Macy's Parade for like 9, 10, or 11 years. I forget now.
Yes.
And thoroughly enjoyed it. And in that time, on those, they paid me properly, not nickels and dimes.
Okay.
But anyway.
I'd hope so.
One Pardo story, he was telling me one time, because we were on staff together, see. His agent's name was Marge Fields, M-A-R-J-E, Marge Fields. He said, I don't do auditions. They can call me. And he said, but Marge called one day, and they said that there was a call out for a Don Pardo sound-alike. So I went ahead and went to the audition, and I didn't get it. And the other one was, years ago, during the on-staff days, it wasn't 24 hours a day. WNBC TV, Channel 2 in New York, was not full-time. And you signed off like around midnight, 1 a.m., and there was sign-off news headlines. They brought us copy, and it was voiceover with the slides, with one slide, which sounds pretty lame for a major network station, you know, even local. But that's what it was, his voiceover. So Howard Rieger had been on the air. He was on the air, and he was doing the sign-off headlines. Well, you've heard about, though, that announcers getting broken up, somebody breaking them up. And once you get broken up, well, it's like doing movies and stuff that happens, you know, you get broken. I mean, you can't stop laughing. Once it's going, you're screwed. You just can't. So
right, you can't get back.
This happened to Howard when he was doing that, reading that newscast. He did something, and he got tickled, and he started giggling. He couldn't stop, even going through all the terrible things in Israel and houses burning down in Long Island, whatever.
Hilarious.
He couldn't stop. He just couldn't control himself. And he was just booting the hell out of it, you know. It just as over tea kettle down the stairs, you know. It just really made a travesty of that newscast. And at the end, after he did the weather, he said, "This is Don Pardo speaking." So Pardo wanted to sue him. I think he may have made a complaint to the union. He complained to John DeAngelo, our boss at the network. He was infuriated by this. And he had an audio cassette of the air check from that night. And I have to admit, maybe I should be sad about it, but I'm not. He played it for me, you know. He played it, and I laughed. So I don't think that went over well, but I thought it was funny. He did not think it was funny.
Did Pardo ever see you on late night and say, "Hey, why aren't I on camera more?"
No, that would have been a character, but no, he didn't.
I mean, your job is that when you were an announcer, if you weren't doing a sketch, would you just come in the afternoon and, you know, only have to be there for a few hours, or what was your day like?
Yeah, it was wonderful. If I had a sketch, I had to show up at noon. Mm-hmm. For rehearsal and then of course get made up. If I didn't have anything, I didn't want to be the bad guy being late showing up, and I got it that my showtime would be 4 p.m. So I would show up at 4 p.m.
Perfect.
And do my very best on the job, and usually I would be out before 7 p.m. That's a good gig. Now a lot of guys like me, who freelancers, they would come in. If that was the situation, do the show opening and leave, you know?
Yeah.
But I never did that. I stayed for the entire show.
You stayed for the whole show.
Just in case.
Wow.
Plus, I would learn a lot, and I would enjoy it a lot. I had a monitor in the booth, mm-hmm. And certainly I learned a lot from that. Learned the most from your rehearsals. You and Mike can understand that.
Yes.
You learn a lot at rehearsals, especially with Conan.
Mm-hmm.
He's a real genius. Two of the biggest, best geniuses I know of. The two things, the clutch cargo thing, pulling down the monitor and talking to Bill Clinton on there or whatever.
Right, a TV yes. screen would come down. It would be a picture of Bill Clinton or someone else in the news, but there'd be a...
with real human lips.
A live lips and a live mouth. And it was kind of the Conan way to deal with topical bits, but in a more over-the-top cartoonish way.
And extremely well. I thought that and the desk drive, and I give Robert credit for that. Maybe Conan came up with them, but it sounds like Robert. That and the desk drive.
Yeah, I'm not sure who came up with the desk drive. Or it might have been, I thought I heard Dino Stamatopoulos might have come up with it.
Oh, Dino. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm not positive on that. But yes, that was a very ambitious bit. So
those are genius, absolute genius. Who would have thought of that? You know,
Dino Stamatopoulos.
That's as good as the top 10 blah blah. You know, on Letterman. You know, the top 10
reasons. Mm-hmm. Although much harder to pull off.
Much harder.
Which is why.
I know, that's just 10 things in a list.
Yeah.
Sounds nice.
We only did it like 4 times a year because everyone would get so cranky. shooting it and rehearsing it.
Oh, yeah.
And then doing it live. It was a true kind of a nightmare to pull off each time. So it was like, let's give that a rest for a while. So
yeah.
Do I remember correctly? I remember Neil Young, the musician, was on for a week of shows.
Yeah.
He kind of did a little residency at the Conan show on late night. And I think he played you one night.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
I don't remember if he lip-synced me or if he did me with his voice. I forget.
I'll have to dig it up. I think Neil Young was in your booth.
Yes.
Ooh. And lip-syncing to your voice.
Right. Yeah, he was very funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was still is a great performer. Yeah, he did a good job with that. It was funny.
Do you have any favorite memories of your time at Late Night? Like just either being in a sketch or an announcement or something that went wrong or something that went right, but just one of your favorite memories of being on the show?
Oh, I have many favorite memories. My favorite sketch of all everything in 16 years was Frank Smiley doing Mother Teresa.
Frank Smiley, who is a segment producer, but yes, he appeared in a lot of bits.
And he played Mother Teresa.
That's one of my favorite bits, too. It is hilarious.
Mother Teresa trashing her hotel room. And listen, fans, you can still find it on, just Google it that way, whatever you call it.
Right.
It's still on YouTube. You can see it.
That's right.
Yep. It's Mother Teresa. He's like calling down to the front desk, asking why I didn't get a wake-up call.
Yeah.
And then flips out from there. It's great. It's only around 20 seconds long, but it's hilarious.
My favorite one of the ones I did,
yes,
mm-hmm,
was Bathroom Tutorial.
Bathroom Tutorial?
I don't think I've seen that
one. Yeah, Jose Arroyo wrote that.
Oh,
it was okay. In the last year, I think the last year of the show. We shot it in the men's room on the sixth floor, right? You know.
Okay.
And Kevin Dorff,
another funny writer,
wonderful performer,
and performer,
played the intended victim in the stall. You need to look that one up.
I don't remember this.
Bathroom
bit.
Tutorial. You know, there's this congressman that got busted in Minnesota or someplace.
Oh, right.
Right. I mean, there are many of those stories, but yeah. I know there was one.
You'll have to be more specific.
Yeah, and Joel and Max go to the park, go to Central Park,
right,
and have fun.
Met you and Max Weinberg.
Yeah.
You know, that once Andy left, like prior to when Andy was there, the comedy bits would kind of go, Conan would do, so oftentimes Conan would do a beat, a joke in a bit, and then we'd cut to Andy and he'd kind of elevate it, and then we'd end on Max.
Yeah.
And Max would kind of be the most outlandish just because he was the third over the top joke. So everyone kind of developed a crazy character for him. And then when Andy left in 2000, it became,
we need a new second or third beat.
Exactly.
Right.
Then it became Conan, Max, and then Joel. And I think that's when.
Yes. To my joy.
Yes.
There were so many funny, funny bits that really got me. Also, the very first shows we did, the things that didn't involve me, they had guys playing gangsters and dunking Andy's face in the water. I want my money. I want my money. And he said, I spent it.
Yeah, those are great. Those were last night on Conan.
Those are great things.
Do you have any memories personally of like any disasters or anything that went wrong when you were taping a show?
Well, one thing is when the whole system and the whole building at 30 Rock went down and we lost all our power.
Uh-huh.
And we came back and we were running on emergency power, and it was just Conan and me sitting on camera there.
Uh-huh.
We had a little discussion. That was fun. They had one little scoop light hooked up on us. You know, it really looked almost like a horror show. That was interesting.
Oh, wow. So they had to throw out what was planned for the show because of the power outage?
And... Oh, yeah. You couldn't have audiences.
Oh, wow.
The whole building was down.
Yeah.
Couldn't have audience, band, nothing. And when it showed up in some publication, they said, Joel got a producer. And I always felt bad about that because we know who the producer is.
Right. Lies.
Yeah, so.
Well, that must have been, I mean, I would have been enticed to possibly cause more power outages after that.
Yeah. Yeah. I never asked Jeff Ross about that, but I'm sure he was already assured that I wasn't after his job, so.
I'm sure he was cool with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a big Northeast blackout that hit the whole Northeast. And we did an impromptu, like, 15-minute version of the show, or 20-minute version of the show. Yeah, I remember that.
Wow.
Yes. That reminds me about laughing and there's something called Gilbert's Bible. W.S. Gilbert of Gilbert and Sullivan wrote something. In fact, I kept it on my wall in the booth. It said each actor must play his part with the greatest gravity. Mm-hmm. And it said the moment he becomes aware of the absurdity of his own words, the piece begins to drag.
Right.
In other words, don't laugh. Some people can laugh during their performance and doesn't hurt a damn thing. Norm MacDonald, you know, didn't hurt him.
Jimmy Fallon.
Jimmy. When Robert goes on, does stuff, you know, on camera, Robert Smigel, doesn't hurt a thing.
Oh, yeah.
But generally, when you're a comedy performer, I think a lot of people, they don't want you to laugh at your own lines.
Right.
And I never had any problem when you brought the copy to me, because you've probably seen that. You'd hand me the copy and I'd rip it, and I would just laugh out loud and your belly laughs reading the copy for what you wanted me to do.
Mm-hmm.
But then when I performed it, I never had a problem doing that. It never left. But if I was on with you, if the other fellow's funny, then I have a problem. I'm as easy to break up as I was in high school when I started this.
No, you are always a real pro. Joel is sad. You mentioned about Christmas.
Yeah.
You had it's like a 3-minute run all by yourself, and you just nailed it. It was amazing.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I certainly enjoyed it. Oh, yeah. Another story. Gordo.
Michael Gordon.
I still remember.
Nicknamed Gordo. He was a writer on the show.
Yes. Some actors who take themselves too seriously, you know, especially, you know, from out here, I think in talking to a producer or a director or something, they would say, and you make a suggestion, you dare give me a line reading? that's not my style. That's not my style. And we were doing a spot, a hoo-ha, a sketch. I was on with Conan, and somehow Conan and I, there must have been, our characters must have had a little bit of an inappropriateness, you see. And Conan is dumping me or getting rid of me. And my line was, I've got pictures. I did the line, and Michael said, do it this way. I've got pictures. Uh-huh. and of course, at the time he told me that, I laughed my ass off, but that's how I did the line. I've got pictures. So that's an example.
Well, you mentioned having that quote up in the recording booth.
Yes.
And it was such a small space you occupied for so many years. Did you get to personalize it at all? What else did you have in there?
I had a picture. There was a computer in there, by the way, which didn't go untouched.
Oh, so that's what you were doing during the show, was just playing on the computer.
Right. And watching the show and having fun.
Free Wi-Fi.
And there was a picture of Teddy.
Your wife, which I always thought was sweet.
Yeah,
you could see her.
Yes.
Whenever you were on camera.
Beautiful.
She was right behind you.
And on the wall was that saying by Gilbert, signed by a wonderful performer named Rue Knapp, one of the best Gilbert and Sullivan performers ever.
Rue Knapp.
And he had been a professor at San Francisco State, by the way.
Oh.
He gave me that, and he had signed it. It said, in other words, don't laugh. And I kept that on the wall. There was a junk bag under the desk there with staplers and magic markers and God knows what.
Mm-hmm.
Debris.
Let's see. I'd been in the business 20 years before I started marking copy. A lot of announcers, especially at my level at the network there, would consider that kind of a beginner's or an amateur's thing.
Really?
But
I was always impressed by that. Can you describe briefly what marking copy, like what you would do?
Yes. Must have been around 1970 or so. I started marking a full breath because unlike in the 1930s and 40s, when you thought you had to hide the fact that you were breathing, the public has figured out now that announcers breathe.
Right.
So at normal places, you take a breath and nobody cares. But I had to also mark little cheat breaths. So, hello, how are you? Like, you know, and you didn't hear, did you hear me take that cheat breath? Hello, how are you? You didn't get it. You didn't hear it, right?
No, I didn't hear it.
No.
So, and that was the point. So I had to mark little cheat breath points and the full breath points. So I started doing that to take care of the lung thing that I didn't know I had. And I know it now. And then I started marking the difference between what's that up the road ahead and what's that up the road ahead? you know.
Right.
I would mark for that.
Mm-hmm.
So you mark the little squiggly marks.
What word to hit.
Right. So I started doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And from then on, I marked my copy. But that was, as I say, I'd been in the business 15, 20 years before I started doing that.
Oh, wow.
It always helped me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just thought everyone, did that just from watching you. It seemed very professional.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a conductor marking.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and a lot of the...
sheet music.
The New York auditions I've gone to, you know, and you'd see the copies you guys left behind. You'd see one word underlined, you know.
Right.
Or one word, or two words circled or something in the whole copy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whereas if I had... except to my own piece of copy, I would mark the whole thing. Because there is a difference between, I didn't tell you to kill her. I didn't tell you to kill her. I didn't tell you to kill her. I didn't tell you to kill her.
Right.
All of those have different meanings, don't they?
I didn't tell you to kill her.
Exactly.
Wow, you did work on Dateline.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
You know what? We've got to wind up. This has been a real treat.
You have a great memory, Joel.
Joel, yeah, amazing.
I wish it were better, and I'll be so sorry when the red light goes off about things I didn't tell you.
Oh, that's always the case.
But I've loved every second of it.
Well, you can always call back in.
That's right.
Well,
that's
thank right. you. Too bad you gave me your number, because I may do that. You know?
Joel won't stop calling.
Right. Oh, it's been wonderful looking at you and talking to you.
Oh, this has been a blast. It's been a pleasure.
This has been so nice.
All right, Joel.
Thank you, Joel.
Wonderful to chat with you and catch up.
It was just great to hear him.
Yes. And you know what? I forgot he can really hold forth on many topics.
Yes.
Yes.
I know. He almost didn't need us.
We should have excused ourselves early on.
Yeah. It might have been better without us. Anyway, thank you, Joel.
Thanks, Joel.
And hey, just a little New Year's request. If you like the show, you can support us by rating Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast, on iTunes and leaving us a review, hopefully a good one.
And we have a listener question.
Oh, we do.
Here it is. Hey, guys, I'm an Argentinian fan, writing from France, where I'm currently living.
Wow.
Wow. Okay. That's very... It's
checking a lot of boxes.
Yes. And I'm a big Conan fan. Well, that goes without saying. So I love listening to you and know all the inside trickery. The inside trickery that made the show possible.
It's just a bunch of pranks.
It's one big magic trick. Listening to the last episode with Courtney Thorne-Smith, we had her on. We talked to her about her famous appearance with Norm Macdonald. She mentioned a price for the guests to go to a talk show. Are you allowed to tell how that works?
Mm.
Yes. Maybe who is the most expensive? Thanks and keep it up. Happy holidays. From Adrian. Thank you, Adrian.
Well, thanks, Adrian. Oh, there's an accent mark over the A. Adrian?
Adrian.
Oh, this is a good question. They're wondering what guests get paid to appear on the show.
Right. I think people are surprised sometimes to hear that, that they get paid.
Right.
Or especially if they're big stars. It's like, well, wait, what?
Yeah, right. Oh, they need more money? Yeah.
But it's just, you know, it's part of the deal because you're in SAG-AFTRA.
Mm-hmm.
And
every television appearance
is a union.
Requires a fee.
Exactly. So you have to get paid. You can't turn it down. I think it's the going fee for when you're appearing on a show and you're doing over six lines.
Yeah.
I think. So it's like a $1,200 maybe. It uh-huh. keeps going up.
Yeah. It's the minimum fee.
Right.
That any SAG, which is a Screen Actors Guild member.
Right.
Gets for appearing.
Yes. She asked, do some people get more money? I don't believe it. Maybe some shows, maybe some people demand more money, but...
Yeah.
That's a good question. We should, I from what I know, everyone understands that they get this.
They just get the base
minimum
rate.
Fee. Yeah.
And that way it's also like, I don't know, it seems a little unethical almost.
Well,
to give certain people more or, you know.
It would be crass. And I would be worried if I was famous that would leak out that
you had demanded more. Yeah.
So and so. Yeah. Demanding more money. I remember one example. Aretha Franklin was on the show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, back in late night. And she had a few requests. One is that she got paid in cash, which I think is a famous thing with her about...
Yes. Get the money up front.
Get the money up front. And sure enough, she got that. Back then, it was probably $900. Maybe musical guests get a little more, but I don't know if that's the case. And she had another request, which was no air conditioning while she was there because it was bad for her throat.
For her voice. Oh, wow.
And it was a summer. So it
must have been very damp in there.
Oh, you know what? It was brutally hot in there. And people, you know, because usually television studios are kept very chilly so that everyone stays alert and awake. Also, it was for the equipment needed to be chilled.
Mm.
But I don't know if that's true. I heard the real reason was so people stay alert.
Don't fall asleep.
Yeah, they're in survival mode.
Oh,
they're literally
great.
Like, oh God.
Our studio used to be so cold. I had like a special Patagonia jacket just for going down to the studio.
I think shivering makes it easier to laugh. Like,
anything comes out a little bit like a laugh.
Exactly. but not when Aretha Franklin was on. It was brutal.
Did she bring her purse on stage? Did we talk about that already?
I don't know that.
I just love that. Supposedly, she always brought her purse out on stage because she didn't really trust anybody in the back.
Oh, wow.
Not to steal from it.
So, like,
the cash, because she asked for the cash and she put it in the purse and then she'd have to take it on stage with her to perform.
Okay. All right.
Like, if you watch the, the Kennedy Center honors of Carole King, she brings her purse out.
Oh, that's great. I love that.
Yeah.
I heard a wild story about Chuck Berry.
Oh.
This must have been the early 70s or so. Or I don't know. He was doing an outdoor festival in France. It was getting X amount of dollars. And he showed up and he saw it was a festival with like hundreds of thousands of people. And he was like, wait a minute, you're only giving me, you know, basically peanuts. Look at all these people. And he demanded more money, like a lot more money. And they're like, well, you know, no, that's not what we agreed to. And he's like, okay, well, I'm not performing. So they're like, okay. They're like, well, it's a Saturday. All the banks are closed. We can't get you the money. And he goes, supposedly pointed to like all, you know, they had all these, you know, food outlets and t-shirt outlets, all these businesses there. He goes, well, all those people have cash. He goes, so figure it out. And supposedly they came up with the money for him.
I mean,
the cash, and he performed.
That is negotiating master at work.
Man.
I've had that experience of working on a production before where you agree to a certain rate before you show up.
Right.
And then once you're there, you kind of see where the money's being spent.
Oh, well, yeah.
And there's like all this excess, and it's like, oh, the director's assistant has like a Tesla just for running errands. And you're like, oh my gosh. And I was getting nickel and dimed on my salary.
Yeah.
So sometimes you have to wait till you show up and like Chuck Berry, you see, hey, there's a lot of...
Did you say something?
No, I've never said anything.
No,
of course.
No, I
just silently stew.
You know, I learned at an early age, life is unfair. And I'm always just like, yeah, sure, okay.
And I don't like confrontation.
And you know what? I got to say, that's why we've gotten this far in the business.
Okay, did we answer the question? I think so.
It was a very simple question. It was just how much money do people get
paid? It was how much money they get paid. And the answer is the minimum.
Right.
Well, this has been fun, Sweeney. Thank you for another great year on the pod.
It's been a blast. Thank you. I always love seeing you and chatting with you. And
me too. Thank you, listeners, for sticking with us.
And we'll talk about more places to visit in California.
Yes, we'll talk about more desert vacation spots.
You know what? In the new year, I'm going to talk about places to go in New Jersey, where I grew up.
Oh, I think that's great. That's a great resolution.
Oh, yeah. There's some places right outside Newark that I think people would love to visit.
Well, hey, I do have one resolution.
Oh, no one sees this coming. Yeah, what's that?
I resolve to keep liking you.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Submit your listener questions. Dial area code 323-209-5303 or email us at insideconanpod@gmail.com.
Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast, is hosted by Mike Sweeney and me, Jesse Gaskell.
Produced by Sean Doherty. Our production coordinator is Lisa Byrne.
Executive produced by Joanna Solotaroff, Adam Sachs, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco.
Engineered and mixed by Will Beckton.
Our talent bookers are Gina Batista and Paula Davis.
Thanks to Jimmy Vivino for our theme music and interstitials.
You can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts.
And of course, please subscribe and tell a friend to listen to Inside Conan on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or whatever platform you like best.
It's the Conan Show. Put on your hat. It's the Conan Show. Try on some spats. You're going to have a laugh. Give birth to a calf. It's Conan.
This has been a Team Coco production.